Hey everyone, Chris here, and I'm here to remind you guys, if you guys want to see Avengers Endgame with the MTR Network crew, you have two opportunities. One is the LA show at the Cinemark 18 in Los Angeles on April 27th at 12:30 p.m. We have tickets for that. Shanna and Ro will be out there. You can come up, meet. There will be a meetup afterwards at Dave & Buster's after the movie. If you're here on the East Coast and want to come to the DC viewing, we are going to be at the AMC in on Wisconsin Avenue. April 27th, the movie is at 12:30. Now, if you buy the tickets for the DC show, you have two live show opportunities after that. The first one, which is sold out, is a live show that starts at 4:30 and goes to 5:45. The second one, which you still have tickets for, the doors will open at 6, and the show will be from 6:15 to 7:30. You get a live show with members of the MTR Network crew and the Where's My 40 Acres crew. So if you want to come out and see us and hang out with us, or if you just want to see the movie with us, you can go to your go to endgame.mtrnetwork.net to get your tickets. Look forward to seeing you guys. Welcome back to Super Tuesday Recap. It is that time again. We are here to review, what is this? Episodes 9, 10, and 11, I believe, yep. Of
sounds about right.
Yeah, I believe that's right. Let me double check.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm checking for the title of the episodes. It was Project Daedalus, The Red Angel, and then Perpetual Infinity of 9, 10, and 11. Now
I have better names for those episodes.
Okay. Well, you know what? Save that. Save
the Return of Kima.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad to see Kima from The Wire.
Yes.
It's Spock's ass in that jumpsuit was everything. Was the second title. And the third title was Giorgio throwing them hands. Those are your titles right there.
You need to get you a glass of water right quick.
So we're going to get into all this because, I mean, there's a three episodes that have a lot happens in there. I mean, you have the death of Commander Arium. You have the identity of the Red Angel coming through. And then you, like, this whole thing is turning into one of the greatest do you even sci-fi bro moments when you're just like, do not give AI, like, anything. It just... It never goes well. It never goes well. But
didn't they play Mass Effect?
Right. It's just like, and we bring this up all the time. We bring this up all the time because the suits when they go out look like Mass Effect costumes. So we bring this up all the time. Before we get into all of this, because you guys still make the mistake of letting me control the agenda and the cover art. We're gonna turn this episode with me just asking one possible thing, just one quick question and one quick little detour.
Here we go.
Do we have any details and definitions on what Giorgio's DEFCON level fun with Stamets and Culver could possibly be?
Listen!
A million fan fictions were written after that episode. Best episode ever.
What got me, so I'm watching the episode, right? I'm just sitting there watching it, and when Giorgio's in there talking to Stamets, the entire time I'm going, she's awfully kind of friendly and up on him like that. Like, is she flirting with the gay guy? Like, what's going on? Like, I just couldn't understand what was going on. And then I guess it's Tilly says what we're all thinking out loud. Was it Tilly or was it Culver? I can't remember which one of them says, like, you know he's gay, right?
It was Culver.
Yeah, Culver.
All right. And she's basically like, and?
Whatever.
Hey, why you gotta bring up bullshit?
And your petty designations.
It's like in my universe, yeah, you were pansexual and we all got a cooking poppy. Like, I'm just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I love the show.
I did a lap around my living room when she said that.
Like, I was at work and I was like,
this is why I can't watch the show at work. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't watch.
He caught me.
I can do the CW shows at work. I can't watch Star Trek Discovery while I'm at work. I'm like, oh no, there's too much crazy.
They are real.
They got me this.
Cause I'm sitting there going, I'm like, okay, all right. So then you got all these questions. So then is it like, it's like Stamets, Giorgio in the middle, and then Culver, or is it like Damage Culver, then Georgia? Like, I just got so many questions that need answers now, or maybe we don't want
your
answers.
Your mind can't comprehend the types and the positions that could come of this beautiful threesome, so just don't try.
Well, DP is a thing for everybody involved, so there you go.
She had it, you could tell she definitely had Culver. Like, she kept giving Stamets all of this credit. She's like, Oh, you're much smarter than the one in my universe. And oh, I mean, you're a little more neurotic, but like, I can get over that. I'm just like, why is she like all up on him like this? Like, what's going on? Like, she was like 2 seconds away from like stroking his hair, running her fingers through his hair and shit. I'm just like, yo, this is very uncomfortable. And then finally somebody just calls it and she's like, oh, thank God. We can kind of get this out in the open. It's like, yeah. So what you two young men doing later on this evening?
Star Trek Discovery taught me that I never knew I needed freaky Michelle Yeoh in my life.
Oh, hail the queen.
Well, I mean, to get serious about it for a minute, like, I'll make sure to bring, if I don't forget, make sure I bring this up at the end of the show. We had an email come into the mailbag that I definitely want to post to you guys. And somebody was asking about, you know, I think Star Trek Discovery is their first show kind of jumping in on Star Trek, and they kind of want to know what some other Star Trek shows could be for people who aren't really Trekkie, but kind of wanted to maybe jump into there. And the thing that got me about Star Trek, I kind of mentioned this about Star Trek Discovery, is that it really is like all the best pieces of all the other shows. They're doing things I feel like other Star Treks wish they could have done. If you think about it, Star Trek has always kind of played with sexuality and stuff like that, but they, you know, again, product of the time, they could only go but so far. This is a show that's like, oh, no, all the things we kind of implied, all the things we kind of sort of showed, but, you know, we had limitations of the time. We're just going flat out there and doing it with Star Trek Discovery. And it reminds me why I love this medium. It reminds me why I love Star Trek, why I loved sci-fi in general, or even like comic book shows. Like when you look at the shows, TVs, the books, and anything else like that, that really kind of is on the forefront of social change, it's always sci-fi shows. Comic books is always the things that people like to dismiss as being too childish or not being serious, but they're always the ones that show what humanity should be and could be, and addressing the things that we don't normally do in our regular lives. And so I don't know. I really appreciate that. You said what?
But Chris, according to Wired, it's getting too political.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, there was a Wired article that came out.
But it's always been political. Okay.
Have they been watching the show? Have they watched any sort of sci-fi?
No, they're talking about science fiction in general. Not just this show, but all of them.
They've always been that way.
That's science fiction. Science fiction has always been showing us what is the best part of ourselves by, you know, shining a light on what we eventually do right, and then have characters that are showing what we did wrong.
We can go all the way back to Mary Shelley to talk about how science fiction is largely a cautionary tale.
So here it is. Yeah, I have it. Sci-fi writers are imagining a path back to normality. In recent months, the science fiction world has grown increasingly political, with dozens of writers contributing stories to anthologies such as Resist, Tales from a Future Worth Fighting Against, and If This Goes On. Another prominent example is The People's Future of the United States, edited by Victor Laval and John Joseph Adams. I wanted to use my position as an editor to try to help magnify the voices of the people that we invited to participate in the anthology, to sort of shout back at the Trump administration, and also try to imagine some new futures that might help us figure out how to get back to normal from here. Yeah, it's like, dude, so no offense. I get what they're trying to say, right? But like you said, this is clearly written by people who don't understand the original nature. It's like, oh, we decided to do something new, and it's only new because we as white folks decided to do it. That's not how that works, dude.
Right.
So it's that well-meaning kind of ignorance and self, like, centering self.
Or like self-flagellation.
That too.
That's ridiculous. I mean, like I said, this to me is what these shows always wanted to do, but felt, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't do. And, you know, again, we'll get more into these three episodes as we go on later, but I also wanted to bring the fact that, you know, when this show first started on CBS All Access, I was really harsh on CBS All Access because the app sucked. It's much better. I have not had any problems. And I know we talked about this when we first started this season, that we had fewer problems than we did last season. But also got to give them credit that, you know, I've been seeing a lot of CBS All Access ads for them, and they, you know, the idea they're pushing, because CBS is not the show I think of when I think of diversity, the network I think of when I think of diversity. And they've been pushing Shaniqua. She's been the face of them pushing their app when they do the commercials. We know that they have, the Twilight Zone, I think, starts tomorrow, April 1st, with Jordan Peele. So give them credit. I give them credit where credit's due that, you know, they're basically launching the only shows that anybody's really going to care about right now on this app are one led by a black woman and one that's being produced by a black man, which seems to also reimagine Twilight Zone with a really diverse cast. So,
oh, and let's talk about that because, you know, real quick, just a quick divergence, because people are losing their absolute shit saying, oh, he won't hire white people, except isn't one of the episodes of the Twilight Zone featuring old boy from Parks and Rec?
I refuse. So we didn't do an insanity check this week. I refuse to talk about this because it's so ridiculous, right? Because in both the movies that Jordan Peele has done, there have been white people. So he's not even going as far as white directors have gone and saying he's not casting white people at all, which we have on record. Right, we have on record white directors saying they're not casting black people or making them whole excuses as to why, when you're setting a movie in something like, say, I don't know, Egypt, you got an all-white cast. We're not even going to that. He's not even going to that level. He's just basically saying, I'm not casting them as leads. That's it.
Right. But, you know, he can't make a movie with Mohammed so-and-so in the lead.
So I just refuse to even, at this point, when it comes to people saying this, I refuse to even address it on a fundamental level because everyone involved is just, they're not being real. They're not being serious about it. And I just refuse to actually address that because it's bullshit. They know it's bullshit. It's another form of gaslighting, and it's all in bad faith. All of it is in bad faith. So, it's Star Trek Discovery, guys. Yeah, we kind of went on a little tangent at the beginning of the show. let's jump right into this, though. Man, a lot happens this episode. Let's start with, obviously, it was episode 9, and I don't know why it shocked me that they actually end up killing off Commander Arium, because I always seem to forget this show be killing people. I don't know what it was.
They ate Giorgio in episode 2 of season 1.
So I was sitting there shocked, and I was like, wow, they really ejected her out into space and she died, and wow. And then I was like, fucking dumbass, they ate the real Giorgio. I'm like, you're right, you shouldn't even be this is what the show does. It was just one of those things. I got so caught up in the episode, I just didn't think. I was like, no. I was burned. I was like, she's going to save her. She can do both. She can dare. She can save. And then when she got in space, I was like.
But you know what?
What?
That means the writers are doing their job.
Absolutely. Like the entire episode, because again, we brought this up before, that they've been doing a good job of making you care about the bridge staff. And when you find, because I never really questioned. I just thought like maybe she's a race of that was kind of like half android or something. Like I never questioned the idea that she was actually human. And they basically for the most part downloaded her brain into this android body. Like it just never. I never thought that. You know,
man, the ending of that episode was so depressing.
The entire episode was kind of depressing when you think about it. She has to delete her memory. They don't have unlimited storage for what's... First of all, guys, call Dropbox.
Pay your Dropbox bill. Like, that deep into space, though, come on.
That, like, guys, God, we got a spore drive, but she got to download and decide which memory she deletes every day or something like that. Like, that right there was depressing. Because at first I thought it was like, the infection of the drone, I thought that was making her delete the memories. When you find out this is just an everyday thing where she has to decide which memories to keep and which ones to delete because she's running out of storage. I'm like, do you not have offsite storage? Like what? There's no external hard drive. Like what? Get her some help. What are you guys doing? Like this is fucked up. I'm sorry. That just is kind of fucked with me, yo. It's just starting from there. That's where we started at. I'm just like, it just went downhill from there.
honestly, it was a thing where I saw that. So I was like, maybe she gave into it because even she knows this is some bullshit.
Right. It's like, they wouldn't even give me a real body. But I mean, but to be real though, there were some really fucked up things that happened in this episode because she basically almost kills. What's her name? What's her name?
Non.
Kira's Non. She's sitting there dying, and they have a whole. Everybody forget that she's dying over there. Like Burnham's having a conversation with the bridge. They're talking to have a conversation with Aaron, and I'm just like, excuse me. Nan's over there dying. She's
okay. Can't breathe. So I wasn't the only one that was thinking that the whole time. No, I was wait a minute.
You know what? Honestly, I thought maybe she had already died, and that's why they could have a conversation. Yo. And then when the hold opened, I'm like, wait, she was. Yo, that's fucked up.
Yo, when she showed up and Burnham,
not your friend, but come on.
When she showed up and Burnham looked at her like, why'd you do that? I wish you had responded, the bitch tried to kill me. Like, I just wanted something. I'm like, yo, what are you, like, she just tried to suffocate her. She's like, over here struggling to breathe over the, we're not hearing her struggling to breathe on the, okay, we're just going to pretend like, oh, we have, no, like, even Pike, who I love, I've been loving Pike, even Pike didn't go, hey, what happened to my commander? What happened to my chief of security? Is she
right?
She alive over there? So I'm just like I said, that was the one thing that stood out to me. It was just like a lot of fucked up things happened this episode. That was just like, man, if I was, and then at the end, not had to be the one to come back and apologize to Burnham, and I was just like, that's fucked up, yo.
Hell no.
That's fucked up.
No. No, that's not how this works.
That fucked up, yo.
Like, I almost died for you, you crazy woman.
Yeah, that was
like,
that,
like you welcome.
That was that was.
And then you wouldn't follow orders, so I had to do it for you.
Right. That was right. The equivalent of Dick Cheney's best friend who he shot in the face, apologizing for being in the way of Dick Cheney's gun. It's like, Mr. Vice President, I'm sorry that you shot me in the face. I was like, she wasn't wrong though. She needed to do that because you clearly, Burnham, have been compromised and can't make the decision you need to make. I'm sorry. You can do both? No. Kill this bitch. I'm sorry. She needs to die. Needs to die now. Nope.
And that right decision is also helping me to fucking breathe.
Right. Because it was a premeditated. Because she asked her. It's like, yo, so you need. Because I thought it was a retainer. I'm not gonna lie. I was a little racist. I thought she just has. I've been wondering all season, why the fuck in the future do you still need retainers? You ain't can't laser fix her teeth. And they kind of find out it's a breathing apparatus. And here I am being the ignorant one. So I want to apologize for my own racism and ignorance because holy shit, I did not know that you needed to breathe. But yeah, when she asked her, it's like, huh, so you needed to breathe? That's a weird question to ask, but yeah. Here's the thing. If anybody ever asks you if you need something to live,
yes, no.
Either no or don't respond, or immediately put them on a watch list. Because
that's going to come back.
Right. Oh, so you need that brace to walk? Huh, okay. I mean, so if I were to kick it away, you wouldn't be able to walk. Why are you asking these kind of questions?
Oh, no. You know what came to my mind? What happened in Aliens when Burke put the gun outside of the room and then locked Newt and Ripley in the room with the face hugger?
Yeah. No. That was, man, there's just, that episode, I'm not going to lie, it was just kind of fucked up. From the bodies, the frozen bodies in gravity to finding out that they were all talking to a hologram. It just, none of it was good.
Ugh, and heavy.
Yeah. And this, again, this is another one of their forays into like survival horror, like in the beginning with the tardigrade. Like they're so good at this.
Yeah. Well, and I like the fact that these episodes also kind of play back to some things that we've been seeing with the characters. One, I mean, we brought this up last week. They really do need a ship's counselor.
They really do.
I mean, when the admiral had to basically play counselor for Culver, I think in episode 10, I was just like, you guys really need a counselor because your ship has been through so much right now. you guys, you really do. You need a counselor. But
all of that was just Stannis being too goddamn much.
Well, it is.
Stannis didn't even do anything this episode.
Right. But I also think it goes back to the idea of, you know, what Culver said is just like not, it's all new for him. He's in a new body and he knows the things he's supposed to feel, but he hasn't experienced, you know, it's a very weird experience. They're in uncharted territory.
Right. I mean, it's not like he was near death or they thought he died and he didn't. No, he legitimately died.
Yeah, he died and then existed in this other form and then was brought back from that and is now in a body that, quite frankly, is brand new. So even the body he's in, we forget the idea of souls and whether, you know, it is truly him. His body right there and the experiences his body's gone through. Like, remember that when we talked about this last episode? But him missing that scar, you know, that scar's no longer there. And, you know, to everybody else, like to Stamets, it's just like, oh, well, you know, it's fixed. You could have fixed it at any point. But the fact of the matter is he didn't get it fixed, you know, and he is a reminder that he hasn't lived that experience. So and they kind of go with that theme, these entire three episodes of. People, because you get this with Spock when you're when Burnham and Spock are confronting each other and having this conversation, this idea of neither one of them kind of being fully comfortable with who they are and kind of calling each other out, like, you know, Spock kind of reads Burnham pretty well when he says, basically says that you avoid reality because it's easier than confronting your unimaginable grief, you know, which pretty much sums her up, because later on. When she's after, I think it's in episode 11, after she's she finds out that she sees her mom as, you know, the Red Angel and stuff like that, she wakes up and she's basically like, oh, I gotta go do this, and Spock's like, oh, it's nice to see you back to yourself, like, just, yeah, doing things you shouldn't be doing and taking on the responsibility you don't need to be taking on, you know. That's her thing. So everybody on this ship basically needs to have counseling and go to therapy. But they won't. And so we're watching a ship of highly capable people not go through therapy and still be highly functional.
But how can they? I mean, when have they been dry docked?
No. Yeah, don't get me wrong. They have not. I mean, this whole, we kind of forget this whole thing started with them on the way to get a new captain and basically being intercepted going like, yeah, we need you guys to go do this one more thing for us real quick.
The ship needs a Counselor Troi. Bad.
Right.
No.
Okay.
No.
A Counselor Troi type.
No.
You can't have a counselor that fucks your patients. I'm sorry. You just
there,
can't.
And thanks, there it is.
You can't. I mean, we need to say that. You need somebody.
You can't have a counselor that fucks your patients. You can't have a counselor that waits four seasons to wear regulation equipment, even though she's a Starfleet announcer. I could go on. No, we don't need a Troi. No, we don't.
Noted. I stand corrected.
I'm sorry. I feel a certain way about her. I don't hate Marina Sirtis. I think she's a great actress, but I hated the fuck out of that character. I really did.
I mean, she wasn't a counselor. I mean, she wasn't a counselor. It's basically just like, I have a strong feeling about this. It's like, oh, okay, great. That's nice. Counselor Troi has a strong feeling about this, guy. So I guess that means we're going to do what exactly can we do with a strong feeling? Oh, what's that? Nothing? Oh, we can't. What does the Starfleet regulation say about strong feelings, sir? Oh, not a goddamn thing? Okay, cool. So we're going to keep doing what we're going to do anyway. But you go ahead and keep letting us know how strong those feelings get. All right, ma'am? Thank you. Sorry. I did appreciate, though, Admiral kind of shutting up Pike when she's explains why the Enterprise wasn't involved in the war. I don't know how true it was, but all he could say was thank you. Just basically like,
right, she shut that down. Right. Like, what you not supposed to do is mansplain to me, sir. That's what you not going to do.
Right. No, you were the best of us, so we had you stay out of the war, so if shit went bad, we at least had somebody with some kind of morals sitting around. So which by the way, it is a terrible logic there. Like, We set you. We set you out of the war. Huh?
No, it does make sense. You need somebody that is halfway decent.
It made sense, but at the same time, it seemed like they realized that maybe he would not have been good in the war.
Yeah, I don't buy the initial argument that you're the best of us. Because I'm sorry, that's bullshit. All right, you're in the middle of a war. That's actually when you want the people that have morals to be by your side. You know, because you're going to go too far. And so you need some... So I don't... It was a good answer to shut him up to get her off her back, because that's why she's an admiral. And it's basically like, motherfucker, all right, this is what you're going to do.
True, but it seemed like from some people I've talked to that have, you know, done service and stuff, like, they know which guys can't do it. And so they do something to make sure that they're not in their unit or go with them. And maybe that's something about Pike, where he can't really do it. And we kind of seen the hint of him trying so hard when he was with Ash in the shuttle to prove himself. Mm-hmm. Maybe he really doesn't have what it takes to be like a combat soldier.
Well, and that's when we go back to his psych profile after he leaves Talos IV, because I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
Right. And then maybe that's it. But to me, it just, again, her explanation for it, I just don't buy. Like, there's got to be more to it, which I think was kind of closer to what he said, which is, you didn't want me around because you knew I'd probably question some of the decisions you were making, which is, to me, is probably more along the answer, which kind of goes to what you were saying. This is a guy, they were fighting a war that got dirty, and you don't want guys who fight clean in a war that's dirty. You want them to come in and clean up the mess afterwards. But she kind of made it seem like, oh, well, no, if we didn't succeed, then we need the best of us around to keep us going forward. It's like, no. I'm sorry. That is not how that works. That's not how that works.
He's almost smoking his ass.
Right. Yeah. It was like how some Republicans go, like, listen, this Trump guy is terrible. But, you know, I worked in his administration anyway because I wanted to keep the it could have gotten worse. But did you really stop it from getting worse? Did you, or did you just kind of pad yourself on the back? So, okay, all right. But hey, but either way, she shut him up, which is all that really needed to happen. And all I could say was, thanks. Oh, you really think that high of me? Oh, that's nice. Oh, okay. I'll take the compliment. I'll take the compliment. What were you gonna say? Oh, that's somebody else gonna say something. What do you guys think about the idea of the big bad, if you will, being control?
I love it. Love it! That's just me, though.
It fits.
I like it, but there needs to be some motivation to control. Because we get a lot of reaction from control, but we don't get a lot of why.
They just
want to be a real boy.
The fact that it was control, I don't want them to tell us, oh, and I'm going to take over the world because X, Y, and Z in 5 minutes. Okay, let's go, because we still have like 5 episodes left.
Well, no, I thought they did give us a motivation. The explanation of what control is the motivation. Control's they basically put more of their threat assessment into the hands of AI. Like, control is their threat assessment, and so we know. I mean, to me, it just is every sci-fi movie you've ever seen about giving AI too much control. It realizes the real if you give AI this whole purpose is threat assessment, it's eventually going to find out that the people that created it are the real threat.
Mm-hmm.
And sentient life is the real threat. Yeah, it's Ultron. It's everything we've ever seen. So once they explain what control was. Again, it still didn't hit me until after they showed that it was the AI. I was like, oh, now this makes sense. And now everything that goes forward from here makes sense, because the threat is humanity, and now it coming from the future is because it's trying to ensure its existence. So now everything kind of makes sense. It's actually a pretty straightforward and simplistic, probably the more simplistic of the big bads I've ever seen in a show, because it's something we've seen before. You know, it's very, very simple. Like, robots or AI eventually realizes that sentient life is the problem. Shit. It always goes over. It always go what?
I said humans ain't shit.
Well, humans or any life forms. It's like when it took over a Leland, and it was kind of it was talking about, first it was when it took over, I can't remember the name of the Vulcan that was on
Pitar.
It was like, remember Pitar, that's logic. So it's like, it's kind of a simplistic, it's easy to kind of mimic that because it's mimicking logic. With Arium, it's already in, it just takes over her systems. It can control there. And even then, it was struggling because she was finding, because I love the moment when Arium kind of figures something's wrong, she tells Tilly to not leave her side, you know, because she's trying to fight back. And then in the end, when it takes over and does it with Leland, it's like, oh, well, you're human. I'm still trying to figure out how you guys work, because you guys have all these other variables and your motivations are not easy to figure out. So it's basically learning, and has been learning about how sentient life, like you said, ain't shit. and
can I talk about the fact that when she, I didn't know what was happening when Leland got popped in the eye, but I screamed because I did not see that coming.
Oh, I knew. Yo, I'm sorry, again. All right. Anything that requires you to look into something with your eyeballs in the middle of a fight, no, don't do it. Don't do that shit. That's just never good. Like, again, out of all the technology you guys have, and you still need to put your chin into something and look into it with the eyeballs, like, no. Sorry, not a good thing.
I actually thought he got killed by Control. I didn't think he was going to get taken over. I thought Control killed him and then took over his voice.
I feel like he doing hologram
things. I was surprised to see him next episode alive and being fully taken over.
Oh, I don't think he's there anymore. I think he is dead.
You think Leland is dead and it's just
That Control just injected those nanites into the body. Leland's dead.
It might be. Yeah, it's a very interesting. Yeah, it's a very devastating, because like, how do you fight that? Now it's gone from this idea that it just be in the systems. Now it can be in any person, you know. Mm-hmm. And that takes it to a whole other fucking level. I mean, this is turned into, it's basically turned into Terminator, you know.
It also could be the back door into the Michelle Yeoh spinoff. I mean, you know, she's going to continue to be with Section 31, and there could be this entire, you know, battle behind, you know, under the behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, yeah, they kind of done it already, where they're for the most part have wiped out Section 31 almost, right? Mm-hmm. They destroyed their headquarters. And now they've seen to wiped out most of the senior leadership. She's the only one left.
And the promo for the next episode is a bunch of dead Section 31 ships that are dead in space.
Right. So, yeah. I don't know. I think that it's pretty much, it gives her what she wants. And that kind of goes into, you know, in the episode, what was it? 11? Yeah, the episode 11, when Leland, taking over Leland, is trying to get her to steal the data for him, and is kind of playing on what she wants. Like, you don't want to be the one playing on the fact that she feels threatened by the return of Burnham's mother, because she considers herself to be close to Burnham, and she really does care for Burnham like that. And then two, it's like, you want power. You want control. You want to be the person in control of everything like this. This is how you do it. And, you know, she thought about it for a hot seat. And I didn't even thought about it. She did it for a minute, right?
I love the fact that she was side-eyeing Leland the whole time. And it's like, where did this backbone come from?
Right.
Well, and picked up on the fact that he was speaking in a way that he never spoke in.
Yeah.
And she said it like, oh, well, that's very commanding of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very interesting, like, again, you can see how she picks up on, she's as evil as she is, she picks up on different things. That's not the first time she's picked up on something, just tension in the room. Like when Culver walks in episode 9, when Culver walks in and Samus is there, and she feels the tension in the room, and she makes that joke about telling Tilly, you got to savor this masculinity and this tension in this room. I'm like, she is literally getting horny off of the fact that they're both Oh my god.
And these two men don't get along.
Right. She's amazing. She's the greatest. But you're right. You know, I love the fact that she was able to kind of figure it out. You know, and was already kind of side-eyeing him a little bit and concerned. I really appreciated that. And it kind of showed you that, again, she has... and I even love the fact that when she had the conversation with... because we're kind of been dancing around it, but we're getting to Berna's mother. Had a conversation with Berna's mother. Her mother's basically like, I know I've seen your future. I've seen what you do. It's like, I want to thank you for being there to protect my daughter and putting yourself, you know, in front of danger, in front of her. She's like, I don't do that shit. She's like, you will. You basically. I know you. You're,
who are you fooling?
Yeah, she did.
Right. Right.
And she's like, I know who you are. Berna's mother was like, I know who you really are.
Yeah.
And I've seen your future. I've seen everyone's future many times.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into this. Let's go ahead and deal with this Red Angel thing. What do you guys think?
I love it.
I liked it.
I love it. Yeah.
Didn't see that one coming.
Did you have mom on card for the Red Angel? Because I didn't.
I'm nope, sorry. Didn't.
I said, did anyone have mom on the bingo card for the Red Angel?
Nope.
No, I thought they had figured it out that it was Burnham. I was like, well, this does sound like something Burnham would do. Okay, I see it. And it makes sense.
I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then when I saw the mom come out, I was like, oh my God, that.
Well, technically it was a Burnham.
Well, and it would also make sense in the larger scheme of things, right? It makes sense in the larger scheme of things that when you start seeing, it's like, you know, everything, because even Spock was like, oh, let's see, going back to take it and save all of humanity. Yeah, that's something that Burnham would do. That's something over the top because you decide that everything is your fault and you have to, and you on you and you alone can be the one to save everything. And so when you see they're like, it's Burnham, everybody's like, yeah, it's Burnham.
Yeah,
it's,
that sounds like her.
Right. And then when you say it was her.
But I also love how when Spock was trying to figure out why he was chosen, and Stamets was like, well, there is something about you. You just got to figure it out. And the one thing that he regretted the most wound up being the one thing that kept drawing Dr. Burnham back and back to him, and that was his dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing he thought was a failing that was just another reason why people wouldn't accept him was the very thing that's helping them to kind of save the world, save the galaxy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, love that. And I also love the fact that, like, you see exactly where Burnham gets it from. It's like, makes sense. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, yeah. Even down to her mother not wanting to give her affection or connect because the mission came first, and then still realizing she needed to do that.
There's that, but I also think for her mom, it was like, if I connect to you, I won't want to leave.
Oh no, I believe they. Well, see, that's the thing. I think both of the Burnhams do that though, right? They internalize so much stuff. They do not connect well to others because, like you said, once you have that connection, it's hard. You know, Burnham had to get Burnham's speech at Aram's funeral. You know, it's yeah. I
never saw her die, like in the Vulcan Forge, until she finally figured out how to change time.
Well, she says she's seen her die many times.
Many times.
So maybe not just that time, but other times as well.
Yeah.
But that was also the sign that you knew that, as much as you said that her only concern was stopping control, you could tell it wasn't just that because you came back to save Burnham. You came back to save your daughter. If it was just about, you know, stopping the future and all sentient life being wiped out, why do you always come back to save your daughter?
And can we talk about how brutal that death was?
Oh my God. Even Pike was like, we can't do this to her.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that was
very, I mean, I was sitting in my chair just gripping the seats like, oh my gosh, this hurts. This hurts me. And I'm not even there.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Oh, very much. Very much so. It was very brutal. Like, but again, another reason why I can't watch the show at work. The show was way too brutal for that shit.
Did anyone think for a second they might actually like really kill her off?
No.
We were like, I was looking at the clock. I was like, okay, are they gonna bring her back.
Oh no! this show is her. Like you can't.
Yeah. I know that, but for a second I thought maybe they might actually kill her, and then they would have to find her. Because this show can be a bit unpredictable. Like I didn't know how far they were going to actually go until the Red Angel showed up. I was like, I actually didn't realize I was like holding my breath.
Well, and speaking of the show goes to places I didn't know, even down to Leland explaining how he was responsible for her parents' death. Like that, I didn't see that. I was expecting something more evil,
mm-hmm.
per se, and it's like, oh, it's not.
No, it was just incompetence on his part.
It was incompetence, and it kind of made me. It made me actually feel
for Leland too.
It made me feel for Leland. So then when he gets fucked up, I'm like, oh damn, he was actually trying to, damn it, I was actually starting to care about this dude. You're right. Yeah. It's because it's like, oh, okay, it was incompetent. And you can see that he's been kind of dealing with that ever since.
Yeah, it made him who he is.
Right.
Like, it also explains why he was so trying to get the Red Angel and find information, because he knew who the Red Angel really was this whole time. Like,
well, did he know?
He was trying to put right what once went wrong.
Well, did he? I'm not sure if he knew that it was Burnham or that somebody. I think he knew that it was their suit, but I don't know if he knew that was her in it. Right?
Well, he came upon the bodies. If he checked up on what happened,
true.
And the mom's not there and the suit's gone.
True. He did say he did see her body, so he couldn't. Yeah, you're right.
But it's a spy organization. It's in his best interest to lie about that.
True. True. So
I did love the fact that Michael punched him twice.
That was great.
And that's how her and Spock started bonding again. It's like, oh, you punched Bert? You punched Leland?
Oh, man, I wish I had been there to see that.
All right, shit. We good again, yo. You know what? We work. We can work this shit out. You know what? All right, sis. All right, sis. You good. You good in my book, yo. You good. let's see. What else I had here? Again, I'm just going back to the don't be so binary. Oh, I love Giorgio. Oh, so good. So good. Also, gotta say, man, Saru X, man, he ran vulnerable on Leland.
Listen. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it was just so good. It was just like, I was just like, yo, it's like, Commander Saru. It was almost one of those, like, you know, the old school, like, yo, let me just talk to your boyfriend real quick before you go out to prom real quick. Let me just talk to him. Let me holler at you real quick. Let me just say, you know, hey, listen, man, you're going to do what you got to do, but I'm going to do what I got to do. It just kind of reminds you that Saru is like 7 feet tall.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm not fucking with him. I'm not getting on his bad side.
Do you really want this fight? Right.
You don't want that smoke.
I love how much more calm and self-assured Saru is without the threat gangling. He's like, oh, I don't need these to know that you ain't shit. But know this. And I was just waiting for him to say, but know this.
Right. Maybe, hey, look, you know what? Maybe you good now. Maybe you're going to look out for everybody. Well, let me just tell you, if you don't, I'm about to check you. I'm just throwing it out there right now. You know, run up, get done up. I'm just saying, just watch yourself. Just watch yourself. let's see here. I also like this relationship. I mentioned it in my notes in 10, and you see it again in 11. This weird relationship between Burnham and Georgia. Like, it's the one thing, because you always look at Georgia and you're always like, okay, she's clearly not. Her morals are always questionable, I guess is the best way to put it. But when it comes to JoJo, when it comes to Burnham, she makes the better moral decisions more often than not. And it's weird because it's like you don't want to trust her, but at the same time, it's coming more and more obvious that it is genuine. Like, there is something there. Like, she really does. Even though she knows this is not her Burnham, it's just like this almost mother-daughter relationship is just, it's kind of scary.
I think part of it is that, like, we get the impression from when they were in the Mirror Universe that Burnham was a typical Terran, which was like she spent most of her time trying to dispatch with her mother. And I think in this universe, to see for Giorgio to see Burnham as like a dutiful daughter, mm-hmm. I think that was something that won her over. Mm-hmm. I think that was the relationship she wanted with the daughter that she in her universe.
Right.
Yeah. I also think Georgia likes that Michael pushes back a bit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But not too much.
Not too much, but it's not like a defiance for defiance sake, but it has a purpose. Like, no, you're not gonna do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's enough to make note of, because then when you get when you have Burnham's mom bring it up, you know, basically like, no, you're gonna do right by my daughter. You're just like, wait, how do you know what you're talking to, right?
And she's like, oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And I know, but I don't care. She's gonna do right. Period.
It wasn't even that I don't care. It's like, I know what happens. Right. You're going to save her. You're gonna save her in about 10 minutes, actually.
Well, I don't even think it was that time. I don't think she was mentioning that moment, because again, for this was, I don't think this moment was something that she had seen and lived through, right? Because she would have just told him, it's like, hey, listen, your boy Leland's about to come down and try to shoot me, shoot through the suit and do all the crazy shit. I think she's talking about something else.
She could be talking about when the Spock and Michael were on the Section 31 ship, and how, because Georgia let them go, basically, that ended up saving them.
Yeah, it could be. I just think
she was talking in future tense, not past.
Yeah, I think she's talking about something else that's going to happen. Like, I think we're going to see Georgia do something, because again, remember, we're getting to the point where Georgia is about to be the high, crazy as it is, about to be probably the highest ranking person in Section 31 soon. We're going to find her do something where she has a choice between almost like she had this time. And she's gonna make the choice that you don't expect her to make, because it means saving Burnham, and it means putting Burnham above before herself, right? Because even those other moments you mentioned, right, the moment on the ship with letting Spock and Burnham go, you can make mention that was closer to her kind of positioning herself in Section 31, right? You mm-hmm. can you even this up here with her saving the Burnhams when evil Leland comes down, even that was kind of like, again, still saving herself, right? There's still part of herself in this, of her, okay, if he gets that, then I think there's another thing we're going to see. I think something else is going to happen where it strictly is her making a selfless decision, because neither one of these decisions to me are all that selfless. The way Burnham's mom made it seem like it's a selfless decision, and that's why she was like, that doesn't sound like me. She's like, but it will be, you know, but it will be. So I like I said, it'll be, I'd even say if we don't, it might not even happen this season, you know? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Let's see.
How long do you think, Burnham's mom has been the Red Angel? Cause we have 841 logs. So is each log a day? Or is it much longer of her bouncing around in time?
I figured, no, it's the 30 years that she's been. That
do you think she actually's gone?
I'm not saying she's experiencing time the way we do,
right?
But mm-hmm. if you're trying to find a kind of an anchor point, she's been doing this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got to be a long time, because remember, she says that when she finally does break down and has that moment with Michael. He basically tells her, I've seen every one of your moments. You know, the dress you wore to graduation, the uniform you wore to graduation, you know, when you used to get bullied, and when you used to, you know, sing the song. Like, she had every one of those moments. So she's gone back a lot. You got to assume that. I assume that she, and this is how you kind of knew that it wasn't just her going back just to do the mission of stopping control. She went back, her suit basically had infinite energy to do this. She went back and lived her daughter's 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because I'd be curious, because she spoke about how her attempts to try to stop control and getting the spear and figuring it out. So I was just wondering, like, how long has she really been doing this, and might explain why she's so hardened beyond the fact of seeing everyone she knows dying.
I don't think this, just because she's jumping around in time doesn't mean she experiences time differently to that regard. It's still been 30 years for her. She's just jumped around in the span of 900 years in a 30-year period.
It's what she says. She said time is savage.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, I think that's the point there. So, you know, we've seen this in a number of different stories. Like, once that veil gets taken off of your eyes and you actually see what a cosmic, you know, what the cosmos is and what cosmic level decisions are, like, that does change you.
Right. So I assume that the first few years of jumping were just her, you know, getting used to it. And then she saved her daughter and realized that. When she saved her daughter, she realized, oh, I can actually change time. I mean, she saw her daughter die, you know, and then she realized she could actually affect time and save her daughter. So now she's been going. So then it calls you in a question like, well, how many times has she gone back and saved Burnham?
Yeah.
You know?
And the fact that she used that settlement that we saw earlier in the season as her, like, we're led to believe that's her first test case to see if she could actually permanently alter time.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
in some way or measure to save, like, humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's an interesting thing. And then we get this idea that the elevated control is now able to breach as well when she breaches. So is this, there's a whole other level to this, but then brings into the idea of going back to the episode with Saru's planet. It's like, who, because they even said this before. They brought this up about the theory that some of these planets were evolving to advance.
You know, that was a conversation we had last episode,
right?
Yeah, you know, about the Baal.
Yeah. And then they brought it up. They brought that up again in these three. And you're like, and somebody was like, well, no, and that's that can be explained. But then some of it can't be. And you can see that. And so, yeah, like I said, there's a lot going on here that they can deal with.
Well, we also know that she's not responsible for the seven signals.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to push. I'm not going to really say it's pushing back. I'm just going to slightly disagree, because she doesn't know. I don't think she knows how she looks on the outside. So the signals may be her, just the suit, and she just doesn't realize that she is actually those signals.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Or it could be, again, that she's just not telling the whole truth.
Yeah, that too.
Right. I mean, there's a whole other things here. Like, there are three options. One, she doesn't know what she looks like. She is creating the signals unwittingly. Two, she's lying, and she does know she's creating the signals. Three, there's something else that's creating these signals, and we don't know what the signals are. You know?
What would be the point of her lying? What's to gain from it?
The same reason why she didn't want them to help her. You know, and didn't want to tell them everything she knew. And work with them on this. I don't know. She thinks that she alone. Again, the same reason why Burnham does anything she does. Michael does anything she does. Her alone can solve. She thinks she alone can solve the problem. I don't know. Again, let me go with the idea. I don't think that she is lying and that she doesn't. I tend to go with the third option, that is something else. Either control is creating these signals, or. But I don't like that either, because the signals are showing up at places where the Red Angel's going to show up at and is guiding Discovery. That would actually, no, that would make sense then. It would make sense if it was control, right?
It would make sense if it was control, because it still wants all the dominoes to hit so it can come into existence. Or...
Yeah, and it almost worked if you think about it, because it ended up, like I said, like, and her mother kind of did it too with wanting the probe to download the data into their system. But that also helps control as well, because like, it gives her the more opportunity to kind of get access to Discovery and the people on the ship. So I don't know. I don't really have a theory on either way of how that can go, but
I'm just along for the ride.
Right. At this point, they haven't steered me wrong. We got 3 more episodes left. They haven't steered me wrong, so I'm perfectly fine with all this going on right now. I think that was pretty much it for me. Do you guys have anything else?
I like the fact that in the 23rd century, they still say baby girl. that just cracked me up.
No, great, great series of episodes. Great fun.
Yeah. We happened to have rewatched the entire series because there were parts that my wife didn't get to see. So kind of watched over from the beginning. And you know how there are some shows where you get to the end of a season and you go, I can't believe we started here and we ended up here and it's a bad thing. I mean that with this show in the best possible way. Like to go back to the beginning of the season and then get to where we are now, like, good God, we've gone a long way. Mm. This show is just so good.
Yeah, no, it like I said, it's been the culmination of all the other series and what you could we could have always gotten. Like it to me, it's got more action, more, you know, like really fucked up things happening in it, but at the same time it still feels very Star Trek. Like it hasn't lost that element of it. It hasn't lost the element of, you know, wonder, the element of science and all this other stuff. Like that when Spock says, I like science, you know, it's just like this show still has science at its core, and it still does that. And at the same time, it still gets to the core of these characters and getting into them. Like I said, I'm still waiting on, what is the black dude on the bridge's name?
Bryce.
Ronald Bryce.
Because like, he's the only one that hasn't, he's just always in the background. He's the only one that hasn't really done anything yet. And so I'm waiting on him to get his moment next, because Erebos is, and whoever the new girl is who filled in with Commander Arm, because that was kind of an awkward moment when she shows up on the bridge and everybody kind of looks at her, just like.
Fun fact: that was actually the person who played Arium in season one.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah.
I was about to say she looked familiar, and I was like, that looks like her. Because isn't that the same one that's in the picture, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that work?
I think the
actress that had to do with the makeup.
No. So, I mean, like, so we're not gonna address the fact that looks like your old friend, just not within her.
I think that's why everybody looked at her like that.
Okay, because I'm just like, so when are we gonna address that? Because I did a double take. I was like, wait a minute, that you guys showed us the picture, which by the way. Still a sad fucking origin story that I didn't need.
Yeah.
I didn't need that. So I didn't. I mean, we needed it, but I didn't need that origin story of like, wonder who that couple is. Oh, that's them. That was the last. Oh, that's our happiest. Oh, fuck.
Damn.
And then when they were doing the autopsy, if you will, and they were deleting her memory, and that was the last memory. I was just like, it's fucked up, guys. It's kind of fucked up. The show's fucked up. The show gets, they ate the captain. You know, it's just. Gotta remind myself that. All right. Before we get out of here, I know we had some articles, but I'm gonna save those for the next time because I have to go to another review after this. And I wanted to guys hear. I saw we had an email that came into the mailbag, and they were. Let me see if I can just pull it up. See if I can just go ahead and reread this one. Because I would love to, since you guys are the Star Trek Discovery crew, I would like to get you guys' opinion on, you all's opinion on this.
Not Code of Honor. That's my opinion.
I mean, you'll understand that. I'll explain when I read this out. So the second part of the question is from Felix. He says, after the last Super Tuesday recap on Star Trek Discovery, I've been wondering what Trek shows you guys would recommend for a relatively casual Trek fan like me, whose main exposure is the franchise to the franchise, the new movies and Discovery. I've been wanting to maybe start one of the older series during the off season and don't know where to start. I know Ron Moore from Battlestar Galactica worked on Trek at some point, but I'm not sure Voyager or Deep Space Nine would be a good starting point, or even if I should watch it all or use guides or something to avoid the bad episodes I've heard so much about. Thanks in advance, Felix out. So I recommended that he watch Code of Honor, but I was just joking.
You ain't shit. Don't you do my Doctor Who shit for a correspondent like that. What is wrong with you? He's trolling the fuck out of you. Oh my God. What the hell? That's it. Y'all know I'm about to stage a coup at the NTR network and install Shanna. Damn it.
Y'all know I ain't right, so I don't even know why you guys are always shocked by this shit. So anyways, what would you guys say?
Well, I'm never shocked.
I would recommend Deep Space Nine if he likes Ronald Moore. He has an influence on that show, and he did help create Voyager.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and I would even say the Next Generation after starting with season 3, I think.
Yeah. No, I would start with season 2.
Season 2, okay.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a trend with stars. Like Discovery is the anomaly, because generally, you know, the first one or two seasons are a rough ride. You know, Deep Space Nine doesn't really get good until like the third season, but it benefits you to watch them. You know, you just have to remember that TV was different back then than it is now.
Yeah, right. I think that's basically what I said in my response as well. It's just that. You got to remember the different times. Like, you know, the sets are not good. The acting is, it really did take, you know, not just the shows themselves to get that third year budget of actually having sets that look decent. But sometimes it took them actors like 2-3 seasons to kind of get into their roles and really, really own up into it. Right.
To get the writers to pull their heads out of their asses.
That too. You know? So,
and also, I mean, you had a captive audience. I mean, so like when the Next Generation came out, what, there was like really 5 networks that you were really paying attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, there was cable, but cable didn't have original programming on that level. And so, you know, you had 3, 4, 5 seasons to get your act together.
Right. Right. Your show wasn't going like Star Trek wasn't going anywhere. You know, it's just like Star Trek. All right, cool. Everybody watches just because, you know, it's on. You know. All right, cool. We will do the articles and probably more to wrap up the last episode we do on this, which will be the last 3 episodes and the season finale. We'll do that then, and we'll also talk about going into season 3. And I guess hopefully by then we'll have some more information on the other Star Trek shows that are coming out on CBS All Access. So, again, folks, thank you guys very much for listening. And until next time, we're out of here. Peace.
Bye.
Bye.